Welcome to Cooper Talk. I'm your host, Steve Cooper. And remember, I'm only as hip as my guest. And I have a good guest today. I just met him. He's a writer. He's actually friends with Tom Caltabiano, who was on last week, the very funny Tom, who I've known for a long time. And Tom had missed a flight a few weeks ago, and I didn't have a guest. And he said, oh, I know Tony DeSena. DeSena, right?
Yes.
Okay, Tony DeSena and John Manfredotti. And he recorded, and I think now you were getting a crown done that day.
Yes, I was.
Which is, that's funny. I need to go to the dentist. It's so bad. I push it up and it's like, are you afraid of the dentist?
Not really. No. Okay. I'm afraid of how it's going to turn out. But.
Okay. Because I don't know why. I get so scared. I think because when I was little, I was allergic to Novocaine and I'd always get freaked out. They'd be like, hey, you know, you're allergic to Novocaine. You have to get Lanocaine. And I think, or whatever, or not Lanocaine. I don't know. It was like it was this huge needle. And I'd be like, oh my God. And as a kid, when you're like five, and I went to a child's dentist, his name was Dr. Bomsey. And it's funny because I played Little League with his daughter. She was one of the first females. We're talking, this is like in 1970. She was a girl playing Little League, which really didn't happen. But the needle looks so big, and I would freak out. So anyway, Tony, how do you know Tom? Did you know Tom from, I know you have a very great resume. We're going to go over what he's been written for. But I mean, did you write with Tom? I know he wrote for Raymond and also the Creative Emmys.
Yes, I did, and I met him at Raymond. And when he guest hosted the Craig Kilborn show.
Right, I saw that episode.
Yeah, I just called him and said hello, and we got friendlier after that. I told him what a nice job he did.
Okay.
And we got a little friendlier, and so we've known each other since then.
It's just weird, because it's funny, because people, especially comics and writers, when you hit that bond, you know, it really sticks. And even if you work with someone, like, especially for this show, I mean, I did comedy from 88 to 95, and I got out of the business. But people I had worked with, like, people from Philly, like Paul Tompkins and Todd Glass and writers like John Matta, I would say, hey, you want to come on the show? And they remember you, even though you haven't talked to them. I mean, basically, it's been like almost 20 years.
Yes.
But you, for Tom, was working together. So you're from New Jersey.
It's like being in the Army. Even if you're only in the Army for 2 years, that's time, hard time you put in with people back then. And they don't
exactly.
They don't
and that's
forget.
A good analogy. Yeah, because that's exactly how it is. So now for you, okay, so you said you're from Forum Park.
New Jersey, yes.
No, that's North Jersey. And I always say, is it North or Central?
Oh, it's north.
Okay, because they say Cherry Hill's from South Jersey. We're actually from West Jersey, but I always try to tell people that what do you think? I mean, what do you consider
I think
South
it's
Jersey?
Cherry Hill is Central Jersey, but
okay, okay. Forum's up. Okay,
so
see, at Central, I'm like, I think Central. I think
are
like,
are you? It's Cherry Hill's right across from Philadelphia.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. So I try to explain to people, because guys like you grew up watching New York stations. Guys like us go up, and I try to explain to people. People go, well, why are you an Eagles and a Phillies fan when you're from New Jersey? And I said, well, when I grew up watching hockey, the New Jersey Devils weren't even around. I mean, that's just thing. Are you a sports fan?
Yes, I was at the Mets game at Dodger Stadium last week.
We went Saturday.
See my hometown Mets.
What day did you go?
Thursday night.
Okay, we went Saturday, and there was a lot of Mets fans. And we went Saturday, it was pretty empty. It's so funny. I think now fans can go from other teams just because you feel safe. Like 3 years ago, if I go, you wouldn't wear your Phillies jersey. You wouldn't wear Mets. I mean, it would be scary because it would be like the MS-13 and the Mexican Mafia. But now there's actually police. Yeah. But it was gangbang. I mean, it's not even. It's true. And I mean, I saw people like guy had a Philly shirt on. They're hitting baseballs off his head, and I'm like, just let him root, you know. Yeah. So you're a big Mets fan. The Mets look good. Yes. The Phillies look awful. David Wright's doing great. You got Dickey, who's out the hook. I mean, he's great.
Did he pitch Saturday?
No, Santana pitched Saturday.
And he lost, didn't he?
No, they won 5-0. He pitched a shutout.
Who lost? They lost Sunday.
They lost Sunday. I don't know, because Dickey pitched Friday.
Your viewers or your listeners are really care about this.
Oh, no, they do, actually. They like baseball. So, yeah, okay, so news. So you got, how'd you get into comedy writing? Did you go to school for writing or theater or English?
Well, I got that world's most useless degree, communications.
Okay.
And, really couldn't find much work in the New York, New Jersey area, and started writing jokes for Joan Rivers and Rodney Dangerfield.
Okay, and that was, now, did you want to do stand-up, or you just hung at the clubs, or how did you get the connection to them?
Never did stand-up.
Okay.
Never could do that.
Okay, but you know, but you can write. You write good comedy.
Couldn't do what you guys do.
Yeah, it's
I don't like doing this, and there's no audience here.
I know, it's funny. It's all right, don't worry. We don't bite. It's good, you know. Just with me and you and my girlfriend sitting in the back, because she's in from New Jersey. She lives in Marlton. And so what did you, when you were younger, did you write funny in school, like when you wrote English essays? Or how did you get into writing comedy?
Not sure exactly how I got into writing it. I know I was impressed because my father used to like to watch Ed Sullivan Sunday nights.
Okay.
And my mother used to make me watch Walt Disney, which it was okay, but my father, like, would 8 o'clock would switch it over to,
okay,
to Ed Sullivan. And as a little kid, there would be these guys who would come out in black suits and black ties,
all right,
and they would just talk, and people would laugh at them. And I'd think to myself, what the hell are they saying? What are they doing?
Right.
I'm like 4 or 5 years old, 6 years old. I don't understand what they're doing, but they're making people laugh. They're not like, you know, Abbott and Costello or the Three Stooges where they're hitting themselves over the head. They're just talking.
Right.
They're making people laugh. How are they doing this?
And so...
I was curious, I guess, from a young age about how that worked and who they were.
Did you start following comedy, or
shows, yes.
Okay, like what were some of the shows you watched that were influenced you? I mean, for me, for comedy, it's like the old Woody Allen movies. I mean, I remember even just for comedy writing, I remember watching Take the Money and Run on PBS on Channel 12 in Philadelphia, and I just, my dad had it on, and I was just dying. And now looking back at it, it's still funny, but it's so, in the beginning, it's so just like, not... almost dumb, like we were the biggest, you know, chain brace that we escaped, but stuff like that. But it was just made me laugh so hard. And then when I got his stand up album, a lot of his bits that he did transcended into the movies. What were some of the, like, the shows? I mean, after that stuff, because you're five, as you got older, what did you say? Wow.
Anybody who grew up within 50, 60 miles of New York in the 60s and 70s grew up with Abbott and Costello. A lot of Abbott and Costello I watched. Always liked Get Smart.
A lot of people, you know,
got a big kick out of that show because it was on Saturday nights and I could watch it.
Right.
My mother would not let me watch TV during the week.
Really? Not at all?
So when I was, no.
So
on Saturday nights was a big night for me, and Get Smart was it.
Well, Get Smart is funny because I didn't really watch that. And I want to watch reruns because all my friends were like, it was such a great show. It was just really funny and just before its time. So you watched Get Smart. So when did you, do you remember when you wrote your first joke? I mean, there was a time when you, or you sat and said, okay, I'm going to put this to paper, or when you...
I was a reporter for a local newspaper in North Jersey, and I did an interview with a local TV show host called Uncle Floyd.
I know Uncle Floyd, Oogie. Yep. Uncle Floyd and Oogie, I remember that.
Yeah, yeah.
He's still performing.
Yes, he is.
So you did, how was that interview?
And it was a lot of fun, and I was a big fan of the show, and I ingratiated myself with them and gave him as much publicity in the paper as I could from time to time, and then asked him if I could submit material for that show.
All right. So what kind of, I saw him occasionally later when cable became, you know, we started getting cable, we would get some stuff from North Jersey, but we had Captain Noah for our local TV. It was just like this kid show, and then we had Wee Willie Webber, and we didn't really have any like funny, like the Uncle Floyd show. What was the format of his show? I know he played piano. He was a very good piano player.
Yes.
Did he just do sketches, or did he interview people, or what did he do?
It was all sketches.
Okay.
And he had four or five different guys who was his crew, so to speak, and his sidekicks. And they did just all kinds of wacky stuff, and the show was not really for kids.
Right, but it's funny because
it was like Soupy Sales. It was a kid show that was not a kid show.
Okay, now what did you get a lot of scripts put on there, or were you? I mean, you wrote a few in the beginning and sent them in, or how'd that work?
I would write them and give them to Floyd.
Okay,
that's all.
And now, was it cool when you watched the show and saw your sketches?
The first time I gave him a joke at a live show, which was very specific to the area he was in. And it worked.
All right.
And so he appreciated that, and at least he knew at that time I wasn't a complete idiot.
Okay.
I knew what I was doing. It got a laugh. So he figured, yeah, what the hell? I'll take some jokes.
Okay, so you're writing for him, and then you're still working for the paper.
Yeah.
Now, what, I mean, you know, I look at your, I mean, which you came out, did you come out to L.A.? I mean, how long after you were writing for Uncle Floyd and setting yourself, how long until you moved out here or just decided to come out here? What was the... the path to that?
I would say that was like 5-6 years later.
Okay. So what were you doing in between that time? Were you still writing?
Newspaper stuff.
Okay. And were you still writing comedy for anyone, or was it still in your mind? Or?
Yeah, I told some jokes, like I said,
to Rodney
and Joan, and decided one day to take a shot at the big time.
Okay. So you just got up and moved out here?
No, I sent... and I can't really recommend this to anybody, but I sent 20 pages of jokes to the head writer of The Tonight Show every week for 9 months.
Really? Was that Gene Perrette back? No.
It was Ray Siller.
Okay, so back then, I mean, a lot of people, like young people don't understand is, it's not like now, people, where you can just sit there and email them. It's like you have to write them and then staple them together, type them, and then put them in an envelope. Yeah. It's so funny because I tell people with comics, they go, oh, yeah, well, how'd you get work? I'm like, well, we had to actually have a cassette tape with a headshot with a resume and we'd have to mail it. And it's like now, it's like people, right now, anyone could write jokes. So back then it was probably, did you know anyone who recommended you or you just said, I'm going to do this?
No, I did not.
So did you get any responses from him or how did that work?
6 months I did.
Okay. What did he say? Stop sending me letters?
No, I said in the first letter, I said, you know, either tell me, I will send you material until you either tell me to stop or hire me. And after 6 months he called and said, if there's an opening, are you still interested?
Okay.
He said, I'm making no promises. I'm just curious.
So that means he was liking your stuff.
And I said, interesting. Yeah, he was interested in it, I guess. And so I said, of course, I'm still interested. Yes.
So then that, after like 3 months, then
3 or 4 months later, yeah, I got a magic call. And
so then you had the job. They said, come on out. I mean, I guess they had gotten so many. I mean, you figure every month, I mean, every week, I mean, they had over 700 jokes.
You have to do on a late night show. I knew that. You can't just give them 3 or 4 jokes and say, hey, these are funny. You have to be able to pound it out every day.
It's right.
And so do that. And I wanted him to see that I could do that.
Okay, now what year did you start writing for The Tonight Show?
88.
Okay, so 88.
January 88.
And that was Carson.
Yes.
So, I mean, that's a lot of people don't understand. A lot of people think, like younger people think, The Tonight Show, they don't understand what Carson was. Yeah. And it's so funny because my friend Jeff Martyr, you know, he got couched his first time doing stand-up on Carson. And back then, that was a big thing.
It was.
You know, it's like a few of the guests that come on that said, you know, the first Carson, you know, even Tom was talking about Ray, how he got Tonight Show with Carson, and then nothing happened right after that, which was weird back then. But so you're doing this. So what was it like? I mean, you're going to write. I mean, you're a TV fan. You're a joke writer. You're going to write for, like, the king. I mean, a legend. I mean, were you nervous at all when you're moving out here? Or do you know? Or what was that? What was going through your mind, like, your first day going to work?
Well, I was a little humiliated because I didn't know it at the time, but Johnny called me personally to offer me the job.
Really?
I don't know if he'd ever done that before. Well. And he had called me at 7:30 at night, which was 4:30 here in L.A., and mispronounced my last name.
Okay, what did he call you?
He said, hello, is Tony DeSena there?
Okay.
So I thought, oh, some telemarketer.
Right.
So I said, yeah, what do you want? And then he said, hi, this is Johnny Carson. And when he said that, I went, oh.
Oh, God. That's like classic. That's like a friend of mine. He worked and someone knew George Carlin, and Carlin called him. And of course, he thought it was one of his comic friends. He's like, yeah, shut up, Cooper. Shut up, whatever. And he's like, no, this is George Carlin. But so Carson called himself. And now you must have just been like, wow.
My wife said, like a cartoon, the color drained out of my face, starting from the forehead, just went down my nose, down to my chin. I just went completely white.
So you get the job, so you have to move out here. I mean, now did you just uproot everything, or just say, I don't know how long this is going to be?
Fabulous Oakwood, right up the street here.
You know, it's funny. My girlfriend just gets Entertainment Weekly, and she
saw the big article.
Yeah, she because a lot of people at Oakwood because it's so funny because now it's like all these kids actors. And it was like, and back then, and people, Oakwood is this place where people come in for, you know, long term, short term, and of course it's right not too far from NBC.
Yes, it's centrally located, and you can rent there by the month. You don't have to take a long term lease. Some of them have little kitchen areas. They'll even have knives and forks as part of your rental deal. So if you're moving from out of town and you need all that stuff.
Now, did you make the full-time move, or did you say, I might, just in case it doesn't work out, or what did you do?
I did not sell my house in New Jersey.
Okay. So
I kept the house just in case everything crashed and burned. And as it happened, my first day there, some of the guys took me out to lunch and said, so what are you going to do during the strike? And I went, huh?
Okay, so.
Because there was a pending strike coming up.
Oh, that's.
I worked for 4 weeks, and then I went on strike.
Oh, you went on strike. You move out here.
And then I thought, oh, hell, this is it. This is it. I had it for a month, and I lost it.
And then, so how long did the strike last?
The strike lasted, I believe, 6 months, but Johnny had and a lot of companies had made separate deals to go back to work sooner, as long as they automatically agreed to accept the terms of the new contract.
Okay, so basically, so you guys were the writers
sooner.
So that's good, though. Now, did your wife come out with you, or was she staying back in Jersey until you make things work?
Not initially.
Okay, yeah, because, I mean, it must be a shock.
I didn't know if we were going back and forth anyway, so.
Now, what did you think of just coming to L.A. from New Jersey? Because it's so different. I mean, it's just so funny. I mean, people say, oh, people in New Jersey are crazy drivers. No, people in New Jersey are aggressive drivers who have talent. Out here, they just suck. I mean, they don't put the blinkers on, and they don't do that. I mean, it must have been I was trying to explain how the Jersey Shore, because we were just down there in Avalon last weekend, how the Jersey Shore is not like the TV show, and how people love the summer because there's something called seasons. So what did you, I mean,
and the people on the Jersey Shore are not from New Jersey.
I know, exactly. Doesn't it crack you up? But doesn't that, I mean, doesn't that,
apologizing for them.
I know. Doesn't it, how is it moving out here? I mean, you're coming out, and I'm sure, was the work hour long? Was it days long for the Tonight Show, or what was your normal work day?
Get in the morning. I was initially hired strictly to do desk material.
Okay.
Not monologue.
All right.
So, we would get, Johnny would call in to the head writer around 10 o'clock in the morning. And they would discuss things to do either for that particular day or for days coming up.
Okay.
And then he would come into our office and tell us what to do.
All right.
So on my first day, for instance, 5 minutes after I got there, he knocked on my door and said, yesterday was the Super Bowl. Johnny wants to do a bit on obscure Super Bowl statistics.
Okay.
You got 2 hours. Have it on my desk by noon.
All right. And so back then, it wasn't as easy to...
Holy, okay.
And it wasn't like, it's not like research now. It's like, where do you find that at?
Nope. You just got to pound the stuff out.
I mean, where do you, I mean, was it joking obscure things or actual obscure Super Bowl? I mean, was he making you write jokes about it, or did they want to find actual facts?
It would be, we did not have time to actually have facts. A lot of times we would have research.
All right.
If we did it in advance. But something like that, Johnny had seen the show, the Super Bowl the day before, and said, boy, you know, these announcers, they come up with all these oddball statistics about how this is the first team to come back from a second half deficit of more than 13 points from the Eastern Conference on a Tuesday with an even numbered letters in their name. It was just that kind of odd thing.
So that's it. So yeah, I mean, you're probably going, wow, you think the first day maybe I'll get introduced, but no, boom, here, have it on my desk. But it came out good, I'm assuming.
And then the second day, a monkey had died who, I forget the monkey's name, who had appeared on the show and was popular in the show business, but, and Johnny wanted to do a eulogy. So again, 5 after 10, okay, Johnny wants to do a monkey eulogy. Give me all the monkey jokes you got by 12 o'clock. Yike. Okay.
It's just so funny. You're just new and you're going from Super Bowl to monkeys. It's like you're probably going every day and you work on, what am I going to write about today?
Yeah.
So how long were you with The Tonight Show?
For the last 4.5, 5 years.
Okay, so now did you eventually go from writing desk to monologue? How does the process work? I mean, after a year, they say, you're doing a good job, we want you to do this, or did they?
No, actually, Johnny let a number of writers go.
Okay.
A few 6 months or so after I got there.
All right.
Some of his longer-term guys, and out of sheer fear, some of us who were writing just desk material started writing monologue just to make ourselves more valuable and save our jobs.
All right. So that was it. So
self-preservation.
Yeah. So, I mean, but did you ever worry about your job? I mean, did you ever think, God, I'm the new guy? Because you're probably newer of the writers.
Yeah. Everybody who works on those shows always worries about their jobs.
Now, were you all moved out here?
If you don't get on, you lose your job.
Okay. So what happens? So they go, you submit jokes. Now, did Johnny pick the jokes that went, or how did, like, when you started writing monologue jokes, who picks the monologue?
Johnny always, the host always gets the monologue material on all talk shows, gets it directly.
Okay.
Gets all the jokes directly and picks it himself or herself. If it's
now, were you getting a lot input into the monologue, or I mean, was that?
I was doing okay.
Okay, so you were.
Okay, and the desk material is assembled by a head writer.
Okay,
who, having a staff of anywhere from 12 to 15 guys, will assemble all the jokes, or if it's a sketch, everybody will take a crack at the sketch.
Okay,
and he'll put it together, He'll make it a little fat, and then he'll give it to the host, and the host will maybe take a few edits and cut a few jokes.
See, okay. You know, we got to take a quick break. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to come back with Tony DeSena, not Tony DeSena, as Johnny Carson called him, which that's just funny. It's like of all the things. And, yeah, so we're going to take a quick break. Also, people, send Thursday the 12th, I'll be at the Ice House in the Annex. Come see me perform. That's Thursday the 12th. Tickets are $10. The show starts at 8 o'clock. It's hosted by the very funny John Cavari. Also, please follow me on Twitter. It's at CooperTalk. com. Email me at Cooper at Indie100.com. And if you want to listen to past episodes, you can go to iTunes. There's about 60 of them up. You can just type in Cooper Talk, one word, in the search box, or you can go to CooperTalk.podbean.com. We'll be coming back and talking more with Tony about his SNL days, his Letterman days, and just he's all these great shows. It's great. I mean, it's cool. And we got to find out the Kerwin show. I don't talk about that. So we'll be back with Tony DeSena. Thank you for listening. I'm Steve Cooper. Remember, I'm only as hip as my guests. My commercial's not going. It's always great when it does that.
It's like flying high-priced hookers to your hotel room from New York.
Taking it slowly into my hot, wet...
Okay, maybe not. But it is cheaper. Cooper Talk. Cooper Talk.
Looking for great deals on apparel? Visit OnlineSalesMart.com. Currently, we have authentic Armani designer sunglasses at $100 or more off original price. Novelty neckties of all types for under $10. Necktie sets at discounted prices. And high-quality and genuine leather dress shoes, wallets, handbags, briefcases, and more for less. Visit www.OnlineSalesMart.com. All major credit cards are accepted and all orders are shipped on the double. Once again, that's OnlineSalesMart.com.
Remember abundance. At Shakey's Pizza, don't cut back.
Cut loose with our all-you-can-eat bunch of lunch. Now just $6.99.
Less belt tightening.
More belt loosening. Shakey's all-you-can-eat bunch of lunch. Now just $6.99.
With Supershopper.org, you can post your ad online in just 60 seconds. That's fast. That means that old junk sitting in your garage can be online in less time than it takes for you to stub your toe while looking for the light switch. List your electronics, furniture, automotive, garage sales, and more. If you can legally buy it and sell it, it's on. Supershopper.org. Job postings just $25. Everything else, free. That means you can post your resume, get a job, find an apartment, furnish it, sell your car, buy an SUV, adopt a pet, find a house, get a mortgage, find a handyman, sell the house, buy a beach house, buy a surfboard. Supershopper.org. Now you get it.
Would you like to find out how you can easily own gold and silver bullion? With oil prices and food costs skyrocketing, there's one sure way to hedge against inflation: owning precious metals. And we can show you how. Operators are standing by with your investor's kit on buying precious metals. Call 1-877-722-7032 to learn the secrets of protecting your net worth. Call now to learn how to hedge yourself with precious metals. We'll show you how to finance and own large amounts of precious metals with small amounts of money. This is not options or futures. We'll show you how to collateralize hundreds of thousands of dollars in precious metals with as little as a 25% investment. For an investor's kit with charts and graphs on the latest precious metals trends and opportunities, call 877-722-7032. That's 877-722-7032. To find out how you can own gold and silver and profit from the wild swings in today's economy. As with all speculative investments, purchasing precious metals involves a risk of loss and should be carefully evaluated prior to investing.
Indie100.com.
Welcome back to Cooper Talk. I'm your host, Steve Cooper. Remember, I'm only as hip as my guests. And today I'm only as hip as Tony DeSena, who is a Mets fan, which, you know, it's good that are you a football fan?
Not especially.
Okay, so you're a big baseball fan. Yeah. It's so funny. It's so funny with the Mets and Yankees. It's like so many people are divided, and how did you become a Mets fan? Just it's always interesting to me because I have friends who like are from Hanover Park or Florham. Florham Park's right near Whippany, right?
Yes, it is.
Oh, Frank Torriello is my old college roommate. His dad was a teacher there for years.
Torriello,
yeah. But he's a Yankees fan. Now, how does that work as a kid? Because that's really the Phillies.
Well, almost like anything else, probably you learn from your father.
Okay.
My father was a Mets fan.
All right.
And he became a Mets fan only because he used to be a New York Giants fan.
Okay.
When they moved out, the Mets moved into the Polo Grounds.
All right.
So, by default, He became a Mets fan.
It's so funny. It's like I always sit there, I joke around, I say I would never date a girl who is a Dallas Cowboys fan, because that's a chance that the kid might become a Cowboy fan, and I would never raise a Cowboy fan. It's just me. It's like, because, you know, it's like, as a Mets, like, what team do you hate the most as the Mets? Like, who's your, like,
I don't hate any team, really. You know, I'm not a Yankee hater either.
Okay.
Well, I've gone to a lot of Yankee games. Okay. So. They're just, you know, the other team in town. So.
Okay. See, for us, it's like the Eagles. We just, you hate the Cowboys and you can't stand the Giants. Baseball, the Phillies, I don't dislike the Mets. You know, it's just, and the Phillies stink this year. It's not their fault. You know, the Mets had bad years. It's all, you know, it happens. And people don't understand it. There's like something called a cycle of sports. You know, the Mets will be great and the Mets will have bad years. The Phillies, you know, the Yankees only stay good. It's just because even though they spend a lot of money, a lot of people, I don't know, a lot of their free agents have been busts. I mean, they have, you know, but, yeah. You know, it's, but the thing is, you Jeter stays, you know, just great and just people, and it's just funny. So anyway, so you're writing for the Tonight Show, and the Tonight Show ends. So now where do you go after that? What's your show after that?
Moved over to Letterman.
Okay, now did you have to move back to New York then?
Unfortunately, yes.
Okay. Now were you staying, you had a place here, and now did you keep it when you moved back, or?
Yeah. In fact, my wife actually stayed out here.
Okay.
I was there for the last four or five months of Letterman.
Okay.
New York, NBC.
All right. So you were.
And when he moved to CBS, he was supposed to. He wanted to come out here.
Okay.
Really did. There was no facility in New York for him. He was tired of He was in a very tiny studio, which Conan was in now, and I think Jimmy Fallon's in now.
All right.
And it's small, 6A, and he wanted a real studio. He wanted a bigger place. And there was nothing in New York for him.
All right.
And he liked the CBS facility on Fairfax. It was really nice and wanted to move out here. But CBS wanted him to stay in New York. So they said, how about we buy the Ed Sullivan Theater completely renovated for you?
Wow. So.
And so he said, okay.
Okay.
And that wasn't good for me. So I came back.
Okay. How was it writing for him? I mean,
I was hired to write his opening remarks.
Okay.
He did not do a monologue. He did opening remarks.
Okay.
You did not call them a monologue. Opening remarks.
Really? No.
You do not use the word monologue.
Really?
Is it opening remarks?
Is there a reason?
Johnny does a monologue. Dave does opening remarks.
That's funny. It's just so different. Mm. So, but okay. Now I get.
He used to. Dave only used to do four jokes.
Okay.
No more, no less. That's all right. He ever did.
That's funny.
On NBC. But so, he's not a monologist. That's
right.
What he does.
So you wrote for that, then you left. But now I see you wrote for Saturday Night Live.
Yeah,
do you have to come back? I mean, you leave Letterman.
No, that was a good deal. I wrote Strictly Weekend Update.
Okay.
For Kevin Nealon. And I was able to fax it from out here.
Okay, so you came out.
It was not necessary for me to be there. I used to go back during sweeps.
All right, and just to make sure.
And I would go for a couple of weeks during sweeps. But I did not physically have to be there as I would have if I was writing sketches every week.
Isn't it just weird? It's like you're living in L.A., and then you go back, and then Letterman, and then you're sitting there, and then Letterman's going to come to L.A., so you're like, okay, this is great. And then all of a sudden they go, well, we want you ready for another show in New York. You're probably going before they said the faxing, or you probably were like, oh, geez, I have to go away. It's like you must have been felt like a damn yo-yo.
Well, it didn't bother me, but I just thought, oh, my wife is going to kill me or leave me or shoot me.
What okay, so that was good. So you did that for 2 years.
One season.
Okay, one season. Now, what was that? What was up? Were all the jokes in place, like for rehearsals, or what were they? When would you send the jokes to them? Like you would sit there because it's air show airs on Saturdays.
Yeah, I would start sending them stuff on a Friday.
Okay, so really right before
most of the stuff.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so it's not like because I know
the
sketch writers start
batch on Saturday.
Okay, and so then he would go through and say this is going to work, and then do they rehearse the day of the show?
Yes.
Okay.
There's a final dress. Just before the live show.
Okay.
They do a two-hour version, and then they cut three sketches. It usually ends at about 11 o'clock.
Okay.
Then they have a half hour to make tweaks before they go live at 11:30.
Okay. So what was your, you would just go, I mean, you had to write for Kevin Nealon's style, I'm sure, because was it just you writing it?
I was the only full-time staff writer.
So
Kevin wrote a lot. Herb Sargent wrote some. And other people on staff were invited to, you know, to write, but I was the only person who was hired specifically only to do that.
So what would you do all week? Would you go in the, during the week?
Frank always had some funny political jokes he would throw in.
All right.
Steve Corn was a very funny writer and still is a very funny writer.
Okay.
I don't mean to imply he's not. but he would participate a lot, too, and do some stuff for the show.
So what would you go through the newspaper during the week and say, okay, we're going to write this for the weekend, or how would you find your prep?
Just, writing monologue for Johnny,
okay,
or opening remarks for Dave.
Okay, that's so funny, the opening remarks. It's just the term. It's great. It's funny. So okay, from after that, okay, well, the magic. But you were writing for one that we want, because that show was sort of a mess. I've heard, like, just the producers.
The Magic Johnson talk show?
He wasn't the perfect host. I mean, it's something you wouldn't think. Like, oh, wait. Okay, Magic. Like if Charles Barkley's going to host the show, you go, okay, I can see that. And now Magic's a good commentator.
Yeah, you think that.
Right.
But no. It's the common mistake that so many people have made and so many executives make is that just because somebody's a very good guest doesn't mean they're going to be a good host.
So the Magic Show.
Two different things.
How long did that last for? 3 months? 4 months?
Oh, not even. I think I'm going to say 9 weeks.
Really? Yeah. So that must suck. You get a job, and you got to be excited. And it's like, you see, I mean, you as a writer, I mean, you're sitting there, and you wrote for, Carson and Letterman, so you know when something's work. You must have just been like watching this and going, "What the?" I mean, just it must have been eye opening for you. Going, you came from two masters, and then now you have a guy who's never hosted a show, who played basketball. You're writing jokes, and you must sit there and be as a writer going, "You delivered that wrong, or you don't know how to deliver a joke." Because you know when you write it, you know.
Yeah, he really didn't do a monologue.
Okay,
he did a couple of lines at the top of the show. And that was okay.
Okay.
You know, you don't really expect him to go out there and try to go, in Washington today, President Clinton said, he's
right.
He doesn't do that. He's not going to do it.
Okay.
So that was absolutely fine.
So you did. What were you writing on that show? Were you writing?
We had some tape pieces that we did. Craig Shoemaker was his sidekick, a professional stand-up. So we figured he would do a lot of the funnier stuff on the show.
All right. So 9 weeks,
it was just.
Well, your other shows, you know, Carson, the show ended, and the Tonight Show. I mean, Letterman, he was moving out here and all. What for that show? When you hear after 9 weeks, because you're thinking at least probably 6 months, right? I mean, of employment. What goes through your mind? How do they do that? Do they call you, or do you just hear from someone that the show's canceled, or how does that work?
I saw the writing on the wall, and in fact, actually, at one point, said to a Fox executive, I said, when a show is in trouble, there's all kinds of damage control things that happen, and talk shows will do as insane things like, we're going to change the set.
All right.
We're going to put a new desk and a new backdrop in. Yeah, that'll fix everything. Yeah. Like, yes, people have been tuning in for the decor, so now they'll watch it. But they were doing that, and they started contests. They had contests where somebody would come out of the audience and do free throws with Magic, and they had promotions with, some Bahamas island, and people would send in postcards, and we had to announce it every night. It was just so many gimmicky things to get people to watch. The famous Howard Stern episode where they literally turned the whole show over to him for a rating spike. Which was not a bad idea, but
but it's only one episode.
Anyway.
So what happens when does the executive producer say, okay, where the show has been canceled? I mean, how do you find that out?
Oh God, I don't even remember how that happened.
Because it's like,
remember how that happened.
So you
really don't.
You left that show.
It was just knowing it was going to happen.
Then you went to Later with Greg Kinnear.
Yes.
Which was, I loved the Later shows. And I thought Greg Kinnear was a very good host and very good interviews. Now, what was you were the head writer on that. Now, it was a long time. It was 94 to 98. So for me, I'm trying to remember. I watched it. But now, did Greg do a monologue up front? Or what was your job as a head writer compared to being a monologue writer or a, what was this, the other one called? What Letterman does?
Remarks.
Opening remark. But this is going from an opening remark writer to a monologue writer. To do an SNL, what was your job as a head writer? What was that a different function for you?
I started as a staff writer. Became head writer when Josh Weinstein left.
Okay.
And they had a really actually interesting and innovative idea on that show. which I can't take credit for, they did something called a video log that was not a monologue.
Okay.
He would show a clip of something that happened in the news, and then coming off the clip, he would have three quick jokes about it.
Okay. And so...
And that, and we would do that with three different clips, and that was essentially the monologue, except
all right.
it was a video monologue.
Now, who would find
it? For Greg, because Greg's not a stand-up.
Right.
And as funny as he can be, he's not the guy, kind of guy who's very comfortable either, saying, you know, in Washington this morning.
Right.
So.
And it's sort of more like his talk soup stuff. You know, it was that same, the very clip, boom. So it was, it was, and people were already familiar with it.
Yes.
So now who would decide what clips? I mean, as you, as when you, did the writers decide, or would someone say, if you saw a funny clip, would you say, hey, we should use this? Or how, who found the clips and what was it?
We had guys who were trapped in cubicles.
Okay.
For days and weeks, just watching in hours and hours of horrible stuff, just to find something goofy and funny.
Right.
And then they would assemble a reel. They would give it to the producers. The producers would give it to us. And usually we had five or six that we would write jokes for.
Okay.
And then the best three would get picked for the show.
Okay. So now you're there as the first year as a staff writer.
Mm-hmm.
So then this guy Weinstein leaves. And so that they, mm-hmm. they come to, now, do you have to lobby for that job, or do they say, it's something, you know, that he's leaving, I know I'm going to sit there and, you know, tell him, hey, you know, I would like to take a job? Or how does that work? Did they just come and say, you know, we think you're the guy, Tony?
Actually, Joshua is kind enough to recommend me
okay.
for the job.
So now,
which went a long way.
How does all of a sudden you're going from working with these guys to basically being the boss, right?
I mean, so,
now, how does your responsibilities shift? Do you just oversee everything, or you still have your input? Or is it something where before, if you wrote a joke, I'm sure if they picked it, it was great, but now if you write a joke, and even of the great jokes, people are probably like, oh, why is he putting all his own material in? I mean, does stuff like that happen?
Yeah, of course, but that's the nature of,
right.
of a head writer on any show.
Okay.
Going back to Sid Caesar. I wasn't writing that much anymore. It's sort of the old story of labor moving into management.
Okay.
Once you're attending so many meetings, you just don't have the time to sit at your desk and write
okay.
jokes or sketches the way you used to.
So now you had to pick the best three for each segment.
Yes.
Okay. So now with his interviews, did you guys also write material for that, or did he just
no?
Okay.
We did not. Nor did we for Johnny or Dave. They did not require that.
Okay, so you write the opening things. So now you're doing that, and now you go to, after that, well, a TV series, The Conspiracy Zone, which it says.
Oh, yeah.
It's so funny. It's IMDb. It's like people. It's like Wikipedia. You sit there and you go. People go to Wikipedia. They go, I didn't write that. It's like I said to someone. I said, well, you've been nominated for a few Emmys, and they're like, well, you've been nominated for two Emmys, right, for the Tonight Show.
For the Tonight Show, yes.
See, that's so cool. And you won a daytime Emmy for Sesame Street.
Correct.
Which how does a monologue... Okay, here's the thing. How does a monologue writer... You sit there, you're writing comedy. I mean, Sesame Street... And Sesame Street's a funny show, but you're writing for a different crowd.
Yes.
How did that come up? Because it says you wrote... Later, you wrote one episode, or did you write for Everyone Loves Raymond, or did you write on the show? Were you a show writer?
I just did one episode.
Okay. And now, after that, it says Sesame Street. How does that... I mean, you're writing... How does Sesame Street...
Sesame Street, at that time, the head writer was taking a sabbatical. He was taking a year off.
Okay.
And they wanted somebody just to fill in for 1 year.
Okay.
So they spoke to me and, for some reason, thought that I might be good at it.
Okay. So what was that like? I mean, you're going from a completely different crowd.
I know. My wife said, you started at Johnny at 11:30, then Dave at 12:30, and then, you know, later at 1:30, and now you're going all the way to 7 o'clock in the morning. It's like you're just going later and later and later till
so early morning. You were the head writer for them?
Yes, for one season. Yes.
So what is the writing process on that? I mean, because you write, is it your, because it's on every day, right? The show's on every day, Sesame Street?
Well, it's on every day, but they don't do new shows every day. In fact, they rerun quite a few of their shows.
Okay.
They're very expensive. To do.
So what was the writing? I mean, you're going from writing jokes to, I mean, what was the writing? Where did you put yourself mentally going, okay, did you have to start watching the show to see what was going on with it? Or?
I mean, who hasn't seen Sesame Street? Everybody's very
But I mean, I remember the counts. Like, well, I remember that stuff, but I don't remember a lot of it. I remember Snuffleupagus, but I don't really remember, because I think Sesame Street was like, I watched The Electric Company. Do you remember The Electric Company?
Sure.
And then Zoom. There was a show, I don't know if it was just in New Jersey or just in, it was called Zoom.
Yeah.
And I watched them, and there was a show called Snippets. And I remember those shows. Like Sesame Street, because I'm 47, so Sesame Street wasn't really... around when I was growing up. And so, I mean, it's like, I mean, just, but you're going from, I mean, are you thinking, are these kids going to laugh, or are you thinking, are you going to write some stuff for their parents, or how does that work? I mean, did the other writers sort of say, hey, here's how we do it, or what was the process?
Well, there's little things you have to remember when you're writing for kids, like you can't use a clock.
Okay.
You can't mention time. You can't, if you think about it, you've never seen anybody, you've never seen a clock on the show, and you've never heard anybody ever on Sesame Street say, okay, I'll see you at 10 o'clock, because when you're 4, 5, or 6 years old, you don't know what that means.
Well, you're right.
You have no concept of time.
God.
So a rookie writer might inadvertently put that in.
Okay, so that's, but what were some of the other main differences?
And that was in, I think, 1999 or 2000 that I did that. I did not realize Sesame Street had been on the air 30 years. I did not realize that Big Bird did not have two functioning arms.
Really?
If you ever watch the show, you'll see that there's only one arm that moves. And that's because the actor inside it, Carol Spinney, is using his other arm for Big Bird's head.
Okay. Oh, wow.
Because it's actually taller than he is, the puppet. And his head is actually like in Big Bird's throat. So his hand is working the mouth.
Okay. So
and his other arm is working Big Bird's arm, and the other arm sort of flaps dead on the side.
So you can't really write any action bits.
Yeah, so if you wanted to say, like, well, Big Bird is throwing a ball with a kid. No, can't do that. Clapping his hands during the song? Nope, can't clap his hands.
Playing a banjo? Hell no.
No.
Oh, wow, so that really limits your writing.
But nobody's never noticed it.
I never noticed it. It's just, so you write around that. You go, okay, so, we can't write, you know, that's funny. So you can't have clocks, you can't write that. What are some other, was there anything the other characters couldn't do? Was there any, like,
No.
So it was
you
just
know, you just have to realize that, well, Elmo was always written by Judy Freeberg, who recently passed away, very sad. But Elmo speaks, and a lot of parents and educators didn't like it, always refers to himself in the third person.
Okay.
So if you watch it, he goes, you know, Elmo's happy today. Elmo's happy to see you. And a lot of people felt that was weird. Because they said, why are you teaching kids to do that? Kids are impressionable. If they see Elmo do it, they're going to do it. So they're going to start to talk about themselves that way. Well, guess what? It hasn't happened.
I know. I'm saying.
They know he's a little monster, and so they don't do
there's
that.
There's like but one, there's
worry.
Like maybe a few, yeah, there's a few like egomaniacs who sit there and talk. This never happens. I'm getting irritated. People, my phone keeps ringing. I keep hanging it up because it's not going to happen. But no, you know, we're going to take a quick break. We're going to come back and talk about the Creative Emmys. And we're going to talk about Sesame Street's cool. I never knew that. It's like, it's so funny. It's like, why do people get irritated? It's like, it's just people are so uptight. It's like, come on. It's like, you're right. It's
I'll tell
puppet.
You a dirty secret about Sesame Street.
Okay, cool. We're going to have a dirty secret when we get back. Do me a favor, come out Thursday the 12th to the Ice House. It's a week from Thursday, and it'll be a great show hosted by the great John Cavari, very good friend of mine. It's 8 o'clock in the Annex. It's $10 to get in. Also, send me an email at cooper@indie100.com, or listen to past episodes. Type in Cooper Talk on iTunes, one word, and you'll come up, because if you type Cooper Space Talk, all this Anderson Cooper comes up. Or coopertalk.podbean.com, you can check that out. We'll be back, have a very dirty, what is it, a dirty secret's about?
This one.
It's just one dirty secret. This is going to be great. We'll be right back with Tony DeSena.
I guess the worst part of all this is that the fools who run this show broadcast this crap all over the world. Cooper Talk.
Would you like to find out how you can easily own gold and silver bullion? With oil prices and food costs skyrocketing, there's one sure way to hedge against inflation: owning precious metals. And we can show you how. Operators are standing by with your investor's kit on buying precious metals. Call 1-877-722-7032 to learn the secrets of protecting your net worth. Call now to learn how to hedge yourself with precious metals. We'll show you how to finance and own large amounts of precious metals with small amounts of money. This is not options or futures. We'll show you how to collateralize hundreds of thousands of dollars in precious metals with as little as a 25% investment. For an investor's kit with charts and graphs on the latest precious metals trends and opportunities, call 877-722-7032. That's 877-722-7032. To find out how you can own gold and silver and profit from the wild swings in today's economy. As with all speculative investments, purchasing precious metals involves a risk of loss and should be carefully evaluated prior to investing.
With supershopper.org, you can post your ad online in just 60 seconds. That's fast. That means that old junk sitting in your garage can be online in less time than it takes for you to stub your toe while looking for the light switch. List your electronics, furniture, automotive, garage sales, and more. If you can legally buy it and sell it, it's on. Supershopper.org. Job postings just $25. Everything else free. That means you can post your resume, get a job, find an apartment, furnish it, sell your car, buy an SUV, adopt a pet, find a house, get a mortgage, find a handyman, sell the house, buy a beach house, buy a surfboard. Supershopper.org. Now you get it.
Looking for great deals on apparel? Visit OnlineSalesMart.com. Currently, we have authentic Armani designer sunglasses at $100 or more off original price. Novelty neckties of all types for under $10. Necktie sets at discounted prices. And high-quality and genuine leather dress shoes, wallets, handbags, briefcases, and more for less. Visit www.OnlineSalesMart.com. All major credit cards are accepted and all orders are shipped on the double. Once again, that's OnlineSalesMart.com.
Remember abundance. At Shakey's Pizza, don't cut back.
Cut loose with our all-you-can-eat bunch of lunch. Now just $6.99.
Less belt tightening.
More belt loosening. Shakey's all-you-can-eat bunch of lunch. Now just $6.99.
Indy100.com.
Welcome back to Cooper Talk. I'm your host, Steve Cooper. And remember, I'm only as hip as my guests. And we have Tony DeSena on today, who's written for, we were just talking about this off air. For me, it's like whenever I hear anyone who's been involved with The Tonight Show as being a comic, it's just like you go, wow. And it's so funny because with the Carson years, young people just you don't know how big it was. I mean, it was a matter of people would do that show, and you've heard some of my guests in the past talk about it. Comics would come on and do that show, and then their whole career would change like that. I mean, even when they did stand-up, their asking price would go up. All of a sudden, it was like if you did The Tonight Show twice, and then you started sitting down, forget about it. I mean, you're playing Vegas. You're playing, it was amazing. And so, so we're talking about that. But we're talking about the dirty secret of Sesame Street. Well, I didn't hear this.
Well, it's not.
It's not dirty, people. It's not like pornographic. Don't worry. It's not nothing like that.
A lot of the show is shot in chunks, and it's done that way for money reasons. Like all of the Count episodes for the season are shot in 1 or 2 days.
Okay.
So that you hire the actor, you have the set, you have all the people, you have the lighting, and you do it all at once. Same thing with Cookie Monster. He's doing a different letter of the day. He'll shoot all that at once. They'll fly Frank Oz in from L.A., and the poor guy will sit under this gigantic hot Big Bird blanket for 2 days and sweat his ass off and do it all one day. And they do the same with Elmo. They shoot Elmo segments all at once.
And
that includes the segments with Dorothy the goldfish.
Okay.
And sometimes when you're shooting long segments under hot lights, it can be tough on the goldfish.
Oh, wow.
And sometimes they need a new Dorothy.
Oh, wow.
So there's a little fishbowl off to the side with stand-in Dorothys.
Oh, gosh.
When Dorothy croaks in the middle of a bit, they just pick her up and toss her
and just push
her and put a new Dorothy in the bowl for Elmo.
How often does that happen?
There's a couple episodes, and I only know it because I'm aware of it. If you actually watch, you can see from shot to shot. They're two different fish.
Oh, that's funny. That's so funny. Now it's like if people have all episodes of...
I'm sorry. I hope there's no kids watching. I'm lying. Dorothy's alive.
It's funny. If people will watch have old episodes on tape, they're probably like, okay, I got to check this out. So I guess that makes sense. So now, you were living in New York. Sesame Street's shot in where?
It's actually shot on Long Island.
Okay. Now, did you have to go back?
Silver Cup. I was in their offices in Manhattan, across from Lincoln Center.
Okay, so
I really didn't have to be there for any of the tapings. I did go for some of them because it was interesting.
Okay.
And of course I wanted to see Frank Oz do Cookie Monster. I had to go out for that.
How was that? Was that something?
He's great. He's just great.
Well, he went into directing, right?
He's fantastic. Oh, he's a fantastic director.
He did some great movies.
He's done some very funny movies. Very underrated.
So, yeah, people don't think it's...
And it's a big studio. It's where I think the Sopranos used to shoot there. Woody Allen shoots his movies.
Okay.
All the Law and Orders shot there. In fact, one day I was out there and there was a big rehearsal hall. And I guess they had a bunch of extras who were sitting in a room. And they were all sitting around the perimeter of the room. And they were all dressed as bums and hookers.
Okay.
But they're all reading the New York Times and the Wall Street Journal. And they're sitting in folding chairs reading the New York Times, Wall Street Journal. And they're all dressed over the top bums and hookers.
It's so funny. So, that show's been on forever, Law & Order. I mean,
it's funny to see them.
That's funny. So now you had to move back to New York. You know, it was for just a year.
I was actually living in Hoboken.
I did
move back.
So then did you take the path in?
And they only really needed me for about four and a half months to get all those scripts together.
Okay.
So the whole season could be done in that time frame.
So you've jumped back and forth. I mean, it's funny. It sounds like you've been very lucky that you haven't had to, do a relocation and then, okay, now you're going to get this job. It's like it seems that you've been lucky where it's like your jobs back east have been more shorter term.
Yes.
Which is great. I mean, it must work out good.
Yes.
Now, do you miss the East Coast at all? I always ask people where they live.
Sure.
What do you miss about it? I mean, and honestly, because you grew up in Florenburg, which is, how far is that from New York?
It's about a half hour from the Lincoln-Holland Tunnel.
Okay, so what do you miss most about the East Coast compared to here?
Seasons.
Right. Isn't it weird? I mean, it's so funny. It's like we always bitched about the seasons when we were back there. It's like, oh God. But then you come out here and you're like, what the hell? It's Christmas. It never feels like Christmas because it's like. It's 60, 65. And it's like if you see Christmas lights, you're like, what the hell?
Yes, and there's no passage. You don't feel the passage of time.
Right.
I think out here because every day is pretty much the same.
Right.
And in any other part of the world, you have, the leaves fall off the trees and there's snow. And then it's 6 months later, it's blazing hot. So you feel time pass, but you don't feel that out here. And then you wake up and say, holy God, I've lived out here for 20 years.
It's so funny. I was back east last week and I swear to God, it was... 99.
Yeah.
And you sit there and the funny is because I live in Burbank and people are like, oh, yeah, it's so humid in Burbank. I'm like, no, this isn't humidity. It's like I can walk 5 blocks in Burbank and, I don't have to change my shirt. Yeah. I can get out of the shower in New Jersey. I mean, my girlfriend had the air conditioning on and it was still when I got out of the shower, I'm like, God, it's hot. I can't take a hot shower. I got to take a cold shower because when I... You get out and you're like, you almost feel hot. So it's crazy. So after the Sesame Street, you did a lot of these, funniest TV commercials. Now they were on, were they on NBC, these specials? Was that the?
TBS.
Okay. So now, do you have to sit there and write jokes for that or how does that work? Did they say, here's the commercials?
We have commercials and they would be shown in packages.
Okay.
So, and they would be themed. Some of the commercials would be family-oriented. Some would be workplace-oriented. Some of them would have funny animals. And you'd show like 3 or 4 in a row.
Okay.
And then you'd come back to the host, Kevin Nealon, and he would usually have a joke coming right off the last commercial.
Okay.
Now, since that was the last one you saw.
Okay.
He would have a little snapper.
And so you would sit there and you would see, okay, this last commercial.
And I'd work with him on those.
Now, that was shot out here, right?
They were shot in various locations. We did shoot out here in Venice Beach. We shot in San Francisco, New York a couple times. Once really, really lucky in Paris.
Oh, really?
Yes.
How long would you go for them? I mean, how long was it like a week to? A
couple days.
Okay. So you go to Paris for a couple days.
Shows were extremely well planned. And
that must be great.
We could do everything.
Hey, yeah, you're going to Paris.
We had locations. We went. The crew was all professionals, and so we had the locations and went boom, 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 got it all done.
Now, did Kevin recruit you because he remembered you, or how did that work? Or
sort of. Yes, Kevin's very good.
Okay, that's cool. But that's great. That's great. So then you have the Creative Arts Emmy Awards. Now, explain to the listeners, what are the Creative Art Emmy Awards?
The Creative Arts Emmy Awards are the primetime Emmys that you don't see on the regular primetime show.
Okay.
Because they give out hundreds of awards.
Really?
Hundreds of categories, and they just can't give them all on one show.
Okay.
So this is the show that has all the others.
So it's a regular. Is it the same host
it's
or
it's televised? No, different hosts.
Okay,
but it is televised. It's on the Reels channel.
Okay,
and we use an edited version.
Okay.
We edit it down. It's about a 3-hour show. No commercials, no breaks. We tape it in 3 straight hours.
Wow.
And we give out about 85 awards compared to the primetime show, which does about 27 awards in 3 hours.
Now, what is your function as a writer for that? Are you writing for the lead-ins, or how does that work?
Yes, and all the snappy patter for the presenters.
Okay. Now who are some of the presenters? I mean, like this year, who are some of the presenters? Who are some of the presenters they get? Like, who are the hosts?
It's we're not sure yet. We usually wait for the nominations to come out and see what shows are nominated, who's hot, who's not, who's available.
Okay. Now, like, who last year, who was the host? Do you remember?
Last year. Gee, I should remember this.
Well, you've written it for years. I mean, it's a thing. Yeah, it's something.
Well, some years though we have not used a host just to save time.
So how does that work?
It's not necessary. Just you say welcome to the show, and the first person who comes out as a host says welcome to the show.
Okay.
And here's the first award.
Okay.
It's not really, if you think about it, it's not absolutely necessary to have somebody come out and do 8 or 10 minutes,
right?
And then bring them back every. After that, what do? You bring them back every 10 minutes for what? Just to make the show longer?
Yeah, exactly. And it's
sometimes
like,
it's not worth it.
You're like, wait, this guy's come back on the stage again.
And sometimes they come back just to introduce somebody who's introducing somebody else. So
now,
it's not worth it.
How did you come about getting that job? Was it just something that someone knew you and said, oh, this guy would do a great job for this? Or?
Somebody recommended me for the job. And in fact, when I went in to meet with them, I submitted some original material. They wanted to see what kind of work I did.
Okay.
And I said, but if you hire me, I'm going to write it all by myself.
All right.
Because I've seen so many, can I say shitty on?
Oh, yeah, yeah, that's fine. Okay. Yeah, just no F-bombs. You can say crappy, you can say, yeah.
Okay. I've seen so many terrible award shows.
Okay.
That I said, I want to do a really cool award show, and I want to write it all myself.
Okay.
And they said, yeah, okay.
So you write everything.
I did until a few years ago because they've added more and more awards over the years. It started with about 55, and now there's about 85.
Okay.
So the show's just gotten so long that I can't do it all by myself.
Now, do you also sort of function as a producer type thing, like making sure everything goes smoothly? Like you said...
No, our producer is Spike Jones Jr. He's great. He's absolutely great. And he is great at supporting the comedy parts of the show.
Okay.
Whenever we have crazy ideas... a lot of producers will say, yeah, it's too expensive, it's too much work, and he's always very enthusiastic.
What's one of the craziest ideas you've done for that show that may have been so many people thought it was too expensive?
This was not necessarily expensive, but a couple of years ago, Penn and Teller were hosting, and the cold open involved them saying, well, this is really exciting, we're hosting the Emmys this year, and somebody has to say to them, well, no. A guy in a headset says, no, this is the Creative Arts Emmys, it's not the primetime.
Okay.
Emmys. So they come out, and that segues into them coming out and starting the show. And they said, you know, we got to confess, we're really unhappy to be here because, you know, this is the Emmy Awards. What are you, technical awards, lighting, cameras? Who cares?
Who gives
a damn? And then the entire place goes black.
Okay.
And this was down at the old shrine.
Which is beautiful.
You know, it holds, I don't know what, 10,000 people?
Oh, yeah.
8,000 people? The entire place goes black.
Wow.
And all the lights and all the sound.
That is crazy because you think of the place.
And the place erupts into applause because they're grateful that they're appreciated.
Yeah, a lot of shows wouldn't do that, though. They'd be like, yeah, no, because it's going to take away from the quality. But that's cool. So what's some of the other things you've done that were crazy?
Also, technically, that's a very difficult thing to do.
Oh, yeah, everything, at once. Because, yeah, the thing is huge.
Donovan, I have to give him credit. He was the director, I believe, and did that. Because it's not like one light switch.
Exactly. It's huge. It's like the bathrooms have 87 lights.
You're walking in like... You're afraid to turn them back on. You can't really turn them on all at once.
Yeah, because people
blowing
are like...
a fuse.
That's funny. You know, we have like a little over a minute and a half left. Anything you want to give a little shout out to anybody or you want to tell a funny story before you go?
A funny story. I don't know.
I'm just asking... It's all good. So what's up next? You did the Writers Guild Award too, also, right?
I did that a couple years ago. Yes,
that
was a lot of fun.
Okay,
that was also with Spike.
Okay, see that's good. So you're staying in LA though, which is good.
Yes.
You're going to go back to New York.
And the Creative Arts show I think will air on Reels September 22nd.
Okay,
When the show was on the 15th.
When do you start getting everything ready for that? When do you guys start writing for that? Like a week before or?
January 23rd.
You start writing for?
Excuse me, no. July 23rd.
Okay, I was like, wow. So, okay, you guys go back. And now is Tom writing in for that this year again, do you know?
Tom's not.
Okay.
He's doing other things.
Okay.
He's a very busy guy.
He is. He's very busy. Well, I want to thank you for coming on. Thank you so much. I said, you know, you said you didn't like, it's from the email. You said you don't like interviews. But you're good. You have good stories. It's like people get worried. And it's like, God, I'm just a guy who's the talks, but no, that's what I was telling him off air. I love people who are writers, and you know, or the comics that have, you know, remember, you know, the Carson and the Letterman when he started out, because it's always good stories. It's not for some young guy who's, you know, plays Wisconsin once a month. Anyway, I want to thank you for coming on. People, listen to Cooper Talk. Yeah, you're welcome. It's fun. I listen to Cooper Talk every Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. Friday, after I'm done, after the show, actually, before I air, listen to Living Into Law. That's with me, John Fogelholm, and Sheldon Anderson. And send me an email, Cooper@indie100.com. Thank you for listening. Cooper Talk at Twitter. And remember, I'm Steve Cooper. I'm only as hip as my guests. And you guys have a wonderful weekend.